The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laugh as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
What's up? This your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's hear it for the man, the myth, the legend, super producer, Mr. Max Williams. We are live in the studio. We've been recording more in person. I'm Ben, you're Nolan. I think we dig the vibe.
It's a good vibe. Yeah, we've got some Nag Champa burning, some fresh roasted coffee beans, some artisanal espresso that we're sipping.
I do want to say that we're actually in a different studio today than we have the last couple times.
That's true. We are in the corner office here at the iHeart compound. All our studios have pretty cool names. This one is Prince. Mm-hmm. And what I love about recording in this studio is we will have people walking by this bank of four big windows, and every so often they stop. And I know some folks might not enjoy that, but I love it. I love feeling like I'm an exhibit or I'm in a zoo. Every time I'm in the zoo, I see the animals. I'm like, why do you get all the attention?
The voyeur in me is pleased, and I will never not pronounce it voyeur. Which, by the way, I also decided that the band Pearl Jam. You know how people often put the emphasis on the pearl, mm-hmm. Pearl Jam. I like to call them Pearl Jam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm with you. I got your back. The thing about this studio is that it makes us somewhat public figures when we're recording. And it's apropos for today.
I see.
Because I see. We are going to talk about...
You walked that one a long ways, and I really approve.
We're going to talk about a public figure who is perhaps a bit more well-known than us.
Yeah, Ralph Nader.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Which is funny because Nadir, when spelled differently, N-A-D-I-R, is a very low point. It's the lowest point. And it makes you think about nominative determinism. But despite the name, our pal Ralph has been an instrumental figure in the life of America.
Yeah, he's the Green Party guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's always been a real booster for clean energy and, just a general do-gooder. Mm-hmm. He's the kind of cat you see pop into, like, Democracy Now! Just to talk about the state of the world. And I think his perspective is valid now more than ever. He's not really playing the political game anymore. I think he's a bit more of a consultant, public figure, kind of speaker.
Consumer advocate.
That's right. But there was a time where he was really playing with the big dogs in terms of, putting himself into the political process, ran for president a couple of times, arguably to some threw a bit of a wrench into the works in terms of, you know, the balance of votes, and maybe considered to have done more harm than good by some, just in terms of like splitting the ticket and all of that kind of stuff. I don't really have a perspective on that one way or the other, but it certainly is part of the conversation.
Sure. Yeah. Especially back in 2000, Al Gore was running for president, and members of the Democratic Party were pretty open in their belief that Ralph Nader cost Democrats the election. That's not us saying that. That's people like current President Joe Biden, who said literally to the New York Times, Nader cost us the election.
Right. Nader is not going to be welcome anywhere near the corridors. Which corridors is he talking about?
The halls of power.
The corridors of power. Yeah.
The halls of Congress. But he had a well-established reputation and track record going into those elections. Back in the 1960s and the 1970s, he waged a war of conscience on one of the biggest pieces of the automotive industry. In 1966, he was the protagonist witness, I would call it, at these hearings about automobile safety.
That's right. They were conducted by Senator Abraham Ribicoff of Connecticut, of course, which is a fabulous name for a politician. And at the time, Nader was kind of an upstart young lawyer and you know, a political activist. He had just published a book with the very, not salacious, but you kind of get it what it's about, title, Unsafe at Any Speed, The Designed-In Dangers of the American Automobile. And Ben, we've talked a lot about the history of the American automobile, you much longer than I on your show Car Stuff, but also just the idea of like seatbelts, like when they were implemented and how originally it was sort of like, yeah, we'll throw those in. And there was a long period of the history of this, you know, obviously incredibly important invention, where safety just was not a concern. And that took a lot of political activism to put into place.
Yeah, that's right. One of my favorite weird rabbit holes to go down in YouTube land is these compilations of people who were angry about seatbelt laws. You'll hear the catchphrase, communist, in all these interviews. And it's someone saying, well, you know, making us do this, it's one more step to communism. But it's also a huge leap forward in safety. And it doesn't really depend on your political ideology. Why did this guy, this young lawyer, get elevated from being a witness to kind of a celebrity public figure? It's the fact that he was targeted for retaliation by General Motors. General Motors, as we'll find, hired PIs to try to dig up dirt on a squeaky clean dude.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, back in 1938, Nader's mother, Rose, actually took her four kids for a visit back to Lebanon, where their heritage originates. They actually waited in line to meet the Archbishop of the Eastern Orthodox Church in, I believe it's pronounced Zaleh. But this really, it's sort of like one of these apocryphal type stories, like, you know, Abraham Lincoln cutting down the cherry tree or whatever.
George Washington.
Whatever. See, apocryphal, yeah. Because I can't even keep them straight. Irrelevant, because it probably didn't happen. This may or may not have happened, but the story goes that young Ralph, 4-year-old Ralph, sprightly young lad, refused to kiss the ring, which is the thing you do. You're supposed to do it when you meet a bishop, an archbishop at the very least. And he said, no, I shall not kiss the ring. And that is a philosophy that he carried through throughout his career.
Yeah, yeah. And the end of that story is apparently the archbishop liked his vibe.
Oh, yeah.
And so he patted Ralph on the head and he said, a lot of ideas are going to come from this boy's head. And that's a cool way to handle it,
it
right?
It is. So you could have had him killed.
I hope not. But Ralph grew up in Connecticut, right? And he has a very American origin story. It's kind of like an American dream story. His father, Nader the Elder, arrived in the U.S.
at the tender age of 19, he only had $20 in his pocket, and he was able to, from that admittedly small starting capital, he was able to buy a 2-story, 10-room house, and then a building in the nearby town that became the Highland Arms, which would be the family's restaurant, and all the kids work at the restaurant. This feels already like American mythmaking. You know, this one's not apocryphal. This really did happen, but it's an inspiring story.
Oh, yeah, especially the whole arrived on these shores with $20 in his pocket and a spring in his step and a dream in his heart. Mm-hmm. You know, you love to see it.
And he says later, looking back in life, he says, our restaurant, the Highland Arms, was kind of it was almost like a salon, you know, a town meeting place.
A salon?
Uh-huh. Yeah. A Pearl Jam. And so Ralph would hang out and listen to these people talk, their arguments, their views, their ideologies. And when he was 14 years old, he was carrying home printed copies of the Congressional Record, which he would read from start to finish. I love to read. And let me tell you, the Congressional Record, for the most part, is a bit of a snooze.
Bit of a slog, indeed. Mm-hmm. Gosh, all this stuff sounds made up, but it's not. 14 years old, reading these transcripts, absolutely incredible. And, you know, you hear about places like this restaurant. You know, here in Atlanta, we have Manuel's, or however you want to pronounce it, which is for a long time been a longstanding kind of democratic sort of like place to hold court.
Jimmy Carter's favorite bar.
Exactly. And you hear about that in lots of different places. In Connecticut, with its proximity to the seats of power, you know, New York and D.C., a lot of very politically active folks in this community. So really cool, and makes a lot of sense that he was surrounded and kind of steeped in this world, and that he was able to, at an early age, kind of formulate his own perspective as opposed to kind of like maybe following others.
Yeah, and let's not get it twisted. He was an exceptional kid, but he was still doing normal kid stuff. He had a job as a newspaper boy. He would play baseball for hours during the weekend. It's just that in addition to that, Ralph was already reading biographies about the real muckrakers, the journalists who went hard on the paint back in the turn of the century.
Yeah, speaking truth to power, right?
Mm-hmm. And he interviewed customers. They paid for something at the restaurant at the cash register, and he would hit them with stuff like, what do you think about the gold standard?
That's right. At one point, he actually had a pretty in-depth conversation with Norman Thomas, who had just done a lecture. And this guy was a very famous socialist and presidential candidate, also somewhat of a fringe presidential candidate. You know, I don't know that I would think of the name Norman Thomas and associate it with someone who's run for president 6 times. But that's usually the way history treats people that don't, you know, win. But he says to him, or asks of him, what is your greatest achievement? A little bit of a softball question, I suppose, or a little bit of like the thing a kid would ask for a book report.
Sure.
But all depends on the person, doesn't it? You know, and he got an answer that maybe he wasn't expecting.
Yeah. This guy, Norman, says his greatest achievement is, quote, having the Democrats steal my agenda.
Whoa.
What he means by that is, yeah, he may not have become president, but his views empowered and inspired people in the Democratic Party, and they later enacted many of the changes that he was hoping for. So he's saying the game is bigger than me, and that's something Ralph Nader took to heart. So he goes to Harvard Law School, and he says, he's pretty funny. He's a good public speaker. He later says, from day one, I laughed at the game to prepare corporate lawyers. If anyone fell off the bandwagon and became a lawyer for the poor, it was viewed as a random event. I love this part. They made mine sharp by making them narrow.
Well, that is kind of how you make things sharp, in a knife sharpening kind of context.
Right.
But I love that. That is so visual and really, really a smart way of looking at it. It's true, because a lot of these types of programs at these Ivy League schools are designed to churn out a very specific type of individual.
Sure.
That caters to a very specific demographic, aka the super wealthy. And anyone that maybe chooses to go into more of a social justice field, or maybe to defend the poor or people that are downtrodden or being taken advantage of, that's seen as a failure. And they're probably not asked to speak at alumni events or, you know, graduation ceremonies.
No, not unless they become a huge public figure, as we'll see. Yeah. And there's another thing I love about Ralph Nader in this point in time. So he's going to one of the most prestigious schools on the planet, and he's also regularly disappearing because he becomes a drifter.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
You know, Ben, I gotta say, one of the best parts about spring cleaning is that post-clean clarity you get where you're like, man, how have I been living like this? What's wrong with me?
You're right, Noel. It's kind of like when you find out you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan.
It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month.
To get this new customer offer and your new three-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first three-month plan only.
Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply.
See Mint Mobile for details. He hitchhikes around the country.
He's like this beat poet, kind of like young political activist ideologue. I love it. It's just a really Johnny Appleseed type vibe. Sure. You know, pretty cool.
Yeah, he's researching the rights of indigenous Americans, looking into immigration and migrant workers. He's asking himself the big questions about Puerto Rico. And then he starts reading about automobile safety because he sees so many car crashes during his time hitchhiking.
Huge shout out to Mark Green, who wrote the piece Nader, Then and Now for The Nation back in 2015. You can find that online, I believe. We may have gotten this from EBSCO, so it might not be readily available.
Sure.
But if you can get your hands on it, worth a full read. So, remarkably, I imagine, despite all of his absences, it's like a school marm, you know, you got too many absences. He did graduate, correct?
Yeah, and he went to the YMCA. He was 29 years old. He goes to the YMCA because he wants to work on what he and Mark Green describe as body rights. But again, you know, when you graduate from an institution like this, people take you seriously. Doors open. He becomes pretty quickly a consultant in the halls of power. He is working with the Assistant Secretary of Labor for the Kennedy administration. And the entire time he's doing this, he's always bringing up highway safety. It's like his hobby horse. And he later writes a groundbreaking article, also in The Nation, called The Safe Car You Can't Buy.
That's right. And, you know, he builds on what he learned on his terms, by the way, which I love. You know, his education, his Harvard education, he is using it. He's weaponizing it and using it in a way that perhaps the administrators of such a university would not have intended, which I love that. He's almost like using their power, which, you know, knowledge obviously is power, and this type of deep knowledge of the law, incredibly powerful because it's something that just so many people don't possess. And he's building on it in a way that is helping consumers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the idea, right? He's not in this for a plum corporate gig that turns him into a millionaire necessarily. In fact, he builds off his research from his time as a student and a drifter, and he eventually gets a deal to write a book called Unsafe at Any Speed, The Designed-In Dangers of the American Automobile. He actually writes this book twice, because when he got the publishing deal, he left the only copy of the book in a cab. And you know how it is now, folks. If you ever use Lyft or Uber and you leave something in there, it's still difficult to find it.
Oh, yeah.
A cab in the 1960s? You know what I mean? That's tough.
So funny. It reminds me of the kind of weirdo fringe artist Daniel Johnston, mm-hmm. who he didn't know about like tape duplication. So he would actually record his album every time he gave it to somebody. Nice. He'd record it and then draw the cover every single time. That's obviously great. A little different, but I just think that level of scrappiness is super cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he, in this book, which publishes in 1965 in November, he says, look, the reason for most car crashes basically is not the driver. It's not human error. He says, the reason for most car crashes, it's not the, quote, nut behind the wheel, but the nut in the wheel. Because he's talking about the way the cars are built and that they're being designed, in his opinion, for style rather than for safety.
Yeah, and this is in the 60s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, like, again, we talked about the history of the automobile and the Model T, and originally, I think a lot of it was just about logistics, about creating something as cheaply and scalable as possible, but just safety wasn't as much of an issue. In the beginning, there just weren't that many of these things, and infrastructure, you know, would take time to follow. But as we all know, the law lags way behind, egregiously behind what is actually needed to keep people safe, whether it is in road laws or manufacturing specs.
Technology will always outpace legislation, for good or for ill. And In this book, he brings out, which is worth a read, and again, he's a very talented author, and there are a lot of examples of automobile safety or lack thereof in this book. One example he really focuses on is the Chevy Corvair, especially the 1960 to 63 models. He calls this thing, in the very beginning of the book, he calls this thing the one car accident.
Jeez. Usually it takes two to tango, right? But I think he's referring to some issues with the handling, I guess the drivetrain, I don't know, I'm not a car expert, of this vehicle that was, it was just real squirrely, right? It could like easily spin out.
So if you've ever worked in any kind of group project, we all know that the idea you have at the beginning is not going to be the end result, right? When you're finally done, when you actually make the thing, you're going to have modifications. And the guy who designed the Corvair, Ed Cole, he knew what he was doing. He was smart. He wanted the engine to be all aluminum. That's a lighter motor, and it's a little more expensive at the time. So the motor they actually do design is made of iron instead of aluminum, and that makes it a lot heavier.
Mm-hmm, yeah, and shout out to Matt Crisara from Popular Mechanics. Mm-hmm. I don't think about that publication, but there's some really, really great writing in Popular Mechanics from his article, Remember When? Ralph Nader's expose of Chevrolet Corvair paved the way for better road safety. So yeah, there was this kind of disconnect. That extra weight caused some issues with it being kind of front heavy, like you said. I mean, heavy in general, but also just front heavy.
Sure.
So therefore, there was sort of like a discrepancy in weight between the front and the back axles.
Mm-hmm. And there were other problems with the vehicle related to the axles, the suspension, things that would cause it to suddenly lose traction. You know how this may happen if you were ever at a red light on a rainy day or rainy evening, and then you push the gas and the tires sort of mm-hmm. real quick, that's trying to get traction. And the Corvair because of various design flaws, was just not good at it. It was fun to drive, but it could have a lot of very dangerous problems. General Motors, this is where we get to the ridiculous part. General Motors, a very powerful company then and now, they heard about Nader through the grapevine. Well, also, we contacted them directly multiple times, and they took it personally because at the time Nader wrote this book, it was a culmination point because there had already been more than 100 lawsuits against Chevrolet for the Corvair specifically.
Yeah, not all from Nader.
No.
So this was like a known problem. This was a source of litigation. And Nader was just kind of connecting the dots here, right?
Yeah, and you can read more about this in a great Time article from 1966 called Investigations. Slight spoiler in the title. The Spies Who Were Caught Cold.
Oh, snap. Shout out, we mentioned car stuff earlier. I believe, I'm certain, because I think I was the producer at the time, y'all did a multi-part series on the Corvair.
Yes, multi-part series on Corvair. Also a series about automotive recalls, which is a huge thing. And car stuff, you know, what I always liked about it is we dive into the history of some of this stuff.
Totally.
This is going to be a little bit looser because GM behaves in a villainous way here, and it's fun to talk about. He is 32 at this time. He's only 32 years old, and General Motors decides he is not quite an existential threat, but someone who needs to be taken care of. So they hire a law firm out of Washington to handle things. Find us something on Ralph, mm-hmm. anything. The law firm pays a guy named Vincent Gillen, not Vince Gilligan, different dude, named Vincent Gillen. They pay him a little less than $7,000.
Former FBI guy.
Mm-hmm, now a PI. And they say, find whatever you can on this guy. Get us some like reputation ruining material.
Yeah. And he wrote a letter to, I guess, some of his contacts. I'm not clear if they were connected to the FBI at any point in time, but he essentially had like subcontractors that he would use to like do some of his dirty work for him. And in the letter, he said the following. Our job is to check Nader's life and current activities to determine what makes him tick, such as his real interest in safety, his supporters, if any, his politics, his marital status, his friends, his women, boys, etc. Drinking, dope, jobs. In fact, all facets of his life. You could have just said that, buddy.
Yeah, he's making it clear that they're after dirt. You know, this is not a learn more about you thing.
Or boys, you know, like
drinking and dope. And his marital status, right? Is he having affairs? And so this group, Gillen and Co., they do some really clever social engineering. They call upwards of 60 friends and relatives of Ralph Nader, and they spin a yarn. They say, we're doing a pre-employment investigation. We're doing a background check. So his parents are Lebanese immigrants. They do stuff like trying to figure out if there's any anti-Semitism in his family or in his personal beliefs. And then they said, he's 32 years old. He's got a decent job. Why isn't he married? And this one's a little, not apocryphal, but people don't agree on how this all went down. In at least two instances, Nader charges that Gillen tries to put him in compromising positions with women. He says one girl, he basically says they're trying to do honeypot traps on him. One girl comes to him at a drugstore, and for absolutely no apparent reason, out of the blue, she says, hey, come to my apartment. Let's talk about foreign relations.
Yeah, that's pretty gross. And it goes even further. There's a second example of this type of tactic where a second girl is employed and asked him to help her move some furniture. Oh, could you please help me with that, you big strong man? And he didn't even bite like a little.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, frankly, it sounds kind of rude. You know, he should help the young lady move the furniture if she needs help. But, you know.
Yeah, he also knew he had a target on his
back. No, I'm joking.
He's a wily guy.
It's true. He knows what's up. He's very shrewd. And he totally understands, probably, largely from, remember the game that he was laughing at mm-hmm. back in Harvard?
Yeah.
He knows the lengths that these types will go to. You
sure.
know, he probably learned them from the best himself. Mm-hmm.
And this all leads to him testifying at this hearing for a Senate subcommittee headed by a Connecticut Democrat named Abraham Ribicoff, which mentioned earlier, and this was investigating traffic safety. For the entire week leading up to these hearings, the private investigators followed him all around D.C. They were literally doing the Cold War spy stuff, you know, some picture some guy in a fedora and a trench coat peeking around the corner. Mm-hmm. Where's he going? And they got caught. They got kicked out by guards at the Senate office building who said, hey, you guys are walking around like spies.
Yeah, knock it off. Get right out of town.
What? Get a different hat, at least. You're wearing a spy hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're clearly wearing those, like, mirrored spy gear shades.
Mm-hmm.
The ones where you can see around corners.
Mm-hmm. And they even reference this in the hearing. Ribicoff says, there's too much snooping going on. And he says, you know, Nader, you can feel pretty proud. They put you through the mill, and they haven't found a damn thing wrong with you. They're saying that this guy actually doesn't have dirt. He just means what he says.
I love referring to, like, private investigators and detectives as gumshoes.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego, you know, where the chief, she's like, okay, gumshoes.
Yeah.
That's great. Also, dicks was fun. I watched Seven the other night with my girlfriend, and there's a scene where the SWAT team kicks in the door of this, you know, one of the victim's houses, and they're like, dicks, you got to come in and see this.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah. Funny.
No one says that anymore. They should.
So Nader finally gets to testify, despite all these attempts to destroy his character. And he's really good as a public speaker. He's calm. He is sometimes a little funny, which goes a long way. One journalist called him a, quote, machine gun with facts.
Jesus. Rat-a-tat-tat. He says, I'm responsible for my actions, but who's responsible for those of General Motors?
And he says, you know, we'll paraphrase here, but he says, look, if you're an individual, you lose your integrity once. If you're a corporation, you lose your integrity all the time, and you never encounter consequences for it. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's what he's pointing out. And some folks, mainly from the right side of politics, they try to say, this guy's just out flogging his book.
Mm-hmm.
He just wants to make money selling his book, Unsafe at Any Speed.
Yeah, the Honorable Carl Curtis of Nebraska. I don't think they talk like that in Nebraska. He implies just as much, to which Robert Kennedy gives Nader the chance to say what his real motivations are, to which Nader responds very cromulently. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay, great. He says, because I happen to have a scale of priorities that leads me to engage in the prevention of cruelty to humans, my motives are constantly inquired into. Is it wrong to talk about defective cars, diseased meats? That's a mouthful. Corporate cheating? Is it really distasteful that a person cares enough about issues like these to dedicate his life to changing them?
Mm-hmm.
That's a real, what's the word? When it's a question that really doesn't have an answer. Yeah.
So this
rhetorical. Rhetorical. Yeah. Obviously, those things are great. That seems like a really good thing to dedicate your life to.
And that should be something with which all members of the Senate agree,
because that's
why you're supposed to go into public office, right? To fight for a greater good. So this gets a lot of coverage. The story, as we would say these days, goes viral. And ultimately, Nader sues GM. They settle out of court for $425,000 in 2023 money. That's a little less than $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a big, big win. And Nader's attorney says this is the biggest amount ever paid as damages for invasion of privacy, because they were able to prove that chain of command and trace back those gumshoes and those fedora rocking spies all the way back to General Motors. And essentially, he made the Corvair incredibly unpopular. And there's a great Politico article about this from a few years back by Andrew Glass that is about this moment in history. He sank the Corvair. By 1969, just a few years later, GM stops production entirely.
I mean, essentially, they were trying to put out a small car, you know, that would be affordable to consumers and obviously sell a gazillion of them. But they cut a lot of corners to make that happen. And Nader pointed that out. And so they had to basically go back to the drawing board. How dare he, right?
I mean, that expense alone is far more than
that settlement.
Yeah, way more.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The U.S. public is incensed about this, and they are increasingly on Nader's side. His actions directly lead to the creation of what we call the National Highway Traffic Safety Association, the NHTSA. And over the next half a century, this organization has been in charge of auto safety. They're the ones who decide when a recall is going to occur.
Yeah, that's what, again, this is like, what are we talking here? This is late 60s now, almost in the 70s. Yeah, mm-hmm. 1969 is when they stopped production. It wasn't until this point in history that we have an organization, a government, you know, sanctioned organization that is looking out for the safety of consumers.
Which is crazy because people have been driving for a while.
Yeah. Like how long, what are we talking here? Sorry, I'm totally brain farting on like when the first car came out.
Well, we're thinking, you could think of stuff like the late 1890s.
Yeah.
That's when Henry Ford builds his first car. But then, you know, it mainstreams after that into the early 1900s. And the problem is these cars are getting faster and faster.
That's right. And no one is there to get people to literally pump the brakes.
Would you say no one's at the wheel?
I would say so. I would say both of those things. Yeah.
So this is a good thing. This is inarguably a good thing. Over time, this one organization reduces the rate of deaths per mile driven by 80%.
That's insane. I mean, that's incredible. And there's an analysis from the Center for Auto Safety that determined that this saved more than 3.5 million lives. I mean, we know how, even today, we, you know, living here in Atlanta, we know how many people die in traffic accidents. It's still an incredibly dangerous proposition, even with all of these oversights.
Yeah, he is up there in the story of good guys in the world of cars. In my opinion, he's up there with Niels Bohlen, no relation. He's the dude who invented the three-point seatbelt. Mm-hmm. So that guy alone has saved well over a billion lives by now. And Nader, at this point, Nader could probably rest on his laurels. He went against the Goliath, and he won. But he doesn't. instead of you know, retiring from public life and just hanging out at the family restaurant in Connecticut.
No, this is step one,
right?
You know, in a storied career. You know, this is the perfect example of a guy who puts his money where his mouth is. You know, and he literally takes the money that he made during this legal victory and started an activist agency called the Center for Study of Responsive Law. Once again, very pithy, right there in the title. We need law that responds to the needs of people.
That's right. And so he is the progenitor of what we call the consumer movement or consumer advocacy movement. He says, let's talk about nuclear power. Let's talk about the safety of oil pipelines. Let's get back to food and drug safety, because I think The Jungle was a good book, you know? And then, of course, airlines, pollution, you name it. He is fighting what he sees as the good fight. And the list is incredibly long. You can actually name almost any modern consumer safety thing, and he went to bat for it.
That's right. The Mark Green piece in The Nation lists them in no particular order. Thusly, things like healthcare, smoking, freedom of information laws, laws regarding multinationals, educational testing services, occupational hazards and the like, you know, rights of workers, things like that. Specs surrounding the construction of homes.
Yeah, yeah. And he says, I want to own the means of production, at least in the legal sense. So I'm going to run for president. And this led to him being somewhat of a divisive figure in the American left. In 2000, as we mentioned at the top of this show, as a candidate for the Green Party, he got about 100,000 votes in Florida. The Democratic candidate, Al Gore, lost, according to the Supreme Court, by 537 votes. And the Democratic Party got really, really mad about this. They had fought to keep him off the ballot. And I remember when this occurred,
same.
You would hear people say, you know, a vote for the Green Party is a vote for the GOP.
Well, and you could argue that there's some truth to that, you know, just in terms of, like, you know, if we're talking about what's right, you know, that's one thing. But we live within a system that isn't always about what's right. And you kind of have to choose between, you know, it's a two-party system, basically. So when you have this third party thrown in there, it just can kind of throw things out of whack, and it can take votes away from the actual real candidate. Let's be honest. You know, Nader was never going to win. He was running almost more as like a symbol, you know, almost as more of like taking a stance.
It's similar to that conversation he had with the sociologist back at the family restaurant. He was hoping that his agenda could catch fire. You know what I mean? It's like if you are playing a team sport, if you're playing football, a goal doesn't mean that the entire team hits the finish line, right? And he's saying, if I can just pass this ball of policy on, then my team will win. And there's a great 2004 Guardian profile of Nader by Julian Borger that gets into this controversy, because people were accusing him of falling in love with his own magic, of being like Merlin in A Connecticut Yankee Goes to King Arthur's Court, which, now that I think about it, is even more appropriate. They said, look, this guy is just super into himself. He doesn't understand how the real world works, and he is maybe becoming a bit of a zealot, a bit of a demagogue.
Mm-hmm. You could say the same, or people have said the same things about, like, Bernie Sanders, you know?
Sure, yeah.
And then he's a similar social justice kind of figure, you know, throughout his career. He's done very similar things.
Mm-hmm. And Nader is aware of this. He told the New York Times, we lose to win eventually. That is the story of social justice. You have to be willing to lose and fight and lose and fight and lose and fight until the agenda is won. But a lot of people are saying, hey, man, stop making us lose, though.
Yeah, I mean, again, to your point, Ben, it's less about winning than it is about just gradually infiltrating the consciousness and the rhetoric of the actual party in power. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, you could argue that there are ways to go about that without kind of stacking the deck against them. So, I mean, again, maybe I sound like I'm saying that Nader shouldn't have run. I really don't have a dog in that fight.
Sure.
I just am trying to look at both sides and see if maybe there are other ways of going about this that wouldn't have been quite as divisive. But you know, extreme times call for extreme measures. So, I mean, maybe that's how he was looking at it. The only way to truly get the other side to pay attention is to show them that there are people that are thinking like him and that he can get enough votes to make them realize maybe we should pivot a little bit. Because isn't Gore kind of a environmentalist as well?
Sure. You know?
I mean, yeah. He obviously made those, an Inconvenient Truth films, mm-hmm. You know, yeah. And not to mention inventing the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks, Al. Nader is also kind of moving the Overton window, what is acceptable to be discussed in the public sphere and what is prioritized in those discussions. So while he may be a divisive figure, actually, he definitely is a divisive figure, right? People have differing opinions about him and about his actions when running for president. All that aside, there is no way around it. Without Ralph Nader, there would not have been the consumer rights movement that exists in the United States today.
Yeah, and speaking of putting his money where his mouth is, I mean, he still stands by all of these things that he has, put forth in his policies, in his politics, in his rhetoric, and in his activism for all these years. He was asked in an interview a handful of years ago, if he had ever owned a car. And he says, a 49 Studebaker was the last car I owned. That was the car that if you looked at it, you couldn't tell the front from the rear. I don't have a car. You have to take care of them, figure out where to park, hassle with the insurance gouging, look out for recalls. I use public transportation or walk when I can. Cars are a nuisance.
I mean, I get it.
They're also cool and go vroom vroom.
Right, right. There's also that. And, you know, the U.S., there's no secret, is a car culture. The vast majority of the country, you know, you kind of need a car to get reliable transit. That does not always have to be the case. That may change in the future. But with all this, we can say Ralph Nader took on GM and he won.
That's right. There's one amazing final quote from another interview where he was asked about any of his guilty pleasures that he might have.
Sure.
The interviewer said, do you secretly love Fast and Furious movies? And I'm sure Ralph Nader was like, what's that? He responded, I do like organic ice cream. But no, I don't watch many movies because there's so much to do that occupies almost all my waking time. In fact, I don't even look at TV anymore. I listen to NPR and read the newspapers, the Post and the Times. I'm completely a print person. I don't have a computer. I use an Underwood typewriter. I don't have email or the internet because I want to get work done and not deal with all the crap.
It's kind of like asking Noam Chomsky or Howard Zinn to name their favorite reality TV program. They're going to say, what is, I do regular reality.
Weirdly, though, you know what I saw the other day?
What's that?
Noam Chomsky has one of those masterclass things.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks like a deer in headlights where he's clearly doing the part that's just designed for the promo, where he's really like, I will talk about the most pressing issues facing America today. And then the other parts, he's clearly just riffing like he does, and it looks very natural. But
yeah.
I was still a little taken aback by it. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it's trying to get the message out there. You know what
that's
I mean?
Right.
And that's what he's advocating for. Plus, he is 94 years old, Chomsky.
Jesus.
You're right.
How old is Nader?
He is 89 years old.
Okay. Now. Wow.
So
spry as ever.
Mm-hmm.
Imperially slim.
Thanks for helping fewer people die in car accidents, and thanks for making the consumer movement. You may not agree with the guy's politics necessarily, but I think we can all agree that saving lives is a good thing to do.
I bet he doesn't even have a smartphone.
No, why would he have a smartphone? That guy's landline all day.
I bet he has like rotary dial.
Oh, he might have like a Nokia, the indestructible flip phone.
Sure.
He's got like three numbers.
The brick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think he listens to podcasts? Nah. He doesn't have time. Too much occupying all of his waking hours.
If we print out a transcript and mail it to him.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what he says.
That would be cool.
I think you can say we are fans of Ralph Nader for saving lives, and we are also fans of ridiculous historical stories. I gotta say, too, I've driven Chevrolets. I love Monte Carlos. They were just in the wrong on this one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and with this, we're gonna hit the road with our safety belts on. Thanks, Ralph. And
all 3 points.
All 3 points. Shout out Nils Boland. And we can't wait for a very special episode we have coming out later. We have a lot of tangents and trivia and things that don't quite make it into episodes when we're recording. So we are going to do our first ever clip show. I think we can call it a clip show.
Kinda. Yeah, it'll be a clip show of a type.
Yeah, I think the way I described it off air is it'll be a Matryoshka doll of segues. So do tune in for that. Thanks, as always, to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to our research associate, Dr. Z. Thanks to our special off-air guest, Alex. Alex, are you over there? Hey. All right.
Hello.
We're technically doing a live show. And of course, thanks to our own pal, Jonathan Strickland, a.k.a. The Quister. Who else?
Oh, man. Alex Williams is very much a Ralph Nader-esque type figure, at least in his nomadic existence.
He loves organic ice cream.
He does love organic ice cream and hitching a ride.
There it is.
Thanks to Christopher Astiotis here in Spirit Eves. Jeff Coates doing all kinds of crazy yoga poses out in the world.
Just had her new book come out as well.
That's incredible. Yeah. Congrats. And thanks to you, Ben.
Thanks to you, Noel.
You're a bit of a Ralph Nader-esque figure yourself.
Zoom, zoom, zoom.
We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.